I'm Reverend Lisa Day, minister of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah. Welcome to our weekly radio program, where you'll hear a segment from one of our recent services recorded at our church on beautiful Troop Square. We invite you to join us Sundays at 11 a.m. in person or via live stream on Zoom. You can find the Zoom link and more about Unitarian Universalism in Savannah at our website, uusavannah.org. We hope you enjoy today's program.
Salutations to my spirited, splendid, soulful syndicate. I welcome you as one of your own. Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah, the home of liberal religion here in the Hostess City. I'm Jessica Levitt-Watara, and I will serve as worship associate today. We have a guest speaker with us today, Reverend Rebecca Hines. Our minister, Reverend Lisa, and Reverend Rebecca are doing a pulpit exchange today, and so Reverend Lisa is at the UU Church in Charleston. Reverend Rebecca is the settled minister of the Unitarian Church in Charleston, South Carolina. A lifelong Unitarian Universalist, she grew up in Duluth, Minnesota, and experienced a call to the ministry at a young age. She received a bachelor's degree from the University of Minnesota and a master's of divinity from Andover Newton Theological School in Newton, Massachusetts. Reverend Rebecca was ordained in 2014 and has been serving Unitarian Universalism ever since. Reverend Rebecca and her elementary age daughter love to explore Charleston and enjoy spending time at the pool or the beach. Welcome, Reverend Rebecca. Thank you for being with us. Our worship, religious education, and covenant group theme for April is Embracing Possibility. Jess Swanson will be reading our story for all ages, and Dan Flaherty will be sharing our Love at the Center moment today. Here at the UU Church of Savannah, we are working to build a diverse, multicultural, and beloved community. We celebrate the presence and participation of people of all races, genders, sexual orientations, abilities, and ethnic and national origins. We warmly welcome you on YouTube and on site, whoever you know yourself to be and wherever you are on your journey. As part of our commitment to accessibility, we use microphones whenever anyone speaks so that everyone in the sanctuary and listening on YouTube can hear. If you're visiting with us this morning and you're feeling brave and you'd like to introduce yourself, we would love to hear from you. Please rise or raise your hand and Raven will bring you a microphone to introduce yourself. Are there any visitors on this side of the congregation who would like to say hi?
My friend Cheryl and I are visiting today from the UU Church of Ann Arbor, Michigan. We're visiting some old, wonderful friends who live here in Savannah. What a beautiful city.
Do you have anything? Welcome.
Just delighted to be here. It feels like home already.
Welcome.
Hi, we're George and Betsy from the UU Fellowship of Hendersonville, North Carolina, just south of Asheville, here for a birthday weekend.
Oh,
and it's
wonderful.
Not my birthday.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday and welcome.
Welcome. Is that all of our visitors today? Anyone else who'd like to introduce themselves? Okay, great. Well, if you're looking for a new faith community, we encourage you to visit several times to get a feel for our worship style and our approach to matters of religion and faith. It's wonderful to have you all with us, whether this is your first time or whether this is your thousandth time.
As we enter deeper into worship, we will settle into a spirit of possibility, inviting in the possibility of the most ordinary joy. Our call to worship this morning is called Welcome Morning by Anne Sexton. There is joy in all, in the hair I brush each morning, in the canon towel, newly washed, that I rub my body with each morning, in the chapel of eggs I cook each morning, in the outcry from the kettle that heats my coffee each morning, in the spoon and the chair that cry, Hello there, Anne, each morning. In the Godhead of the table that I set my silver plate cup upon each morning. All this is holy. Right here in my pea-green house each morning, and I mean though often forget to give thanks, to faint down by the kitchen table in a prayer of rejoicing as the holy birds at the kitchen window peck into their marriage of seeds. So while I think of it, let me paint a thank you on my palm for this God, this laughter of the morning, lest it go unspoken. The joy that isn't shared, I've heard, dies young.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Our story today is called Saturday, with the story and the pictures by Caldecott Award-winning author and illustrator Oge Mora. This morning, Ava and her mother were all smiles. It was Saturday, because Ava's mother worked Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Saturday was the day they cherished. On Saturdays, they zipped to the library for weekly story time. On Saturdays, they lounged in salon chairs and got new hairdos. On Saturdays, they picnicked in the grass for a peaceful afternoon in the park. And on this Saturday, they would also ride the bus across town for a one-night-only puppet show. The day would be special. The day would be splendid. The day was Saturday. Ava and her mother could hardly wait. So, zoom, off they went. But when they reached the library, story time was canceled. "Oh no," Ava cried. "It's canceled," wailed Ava's mother. They paused, closed their eyes, and let out a deep breath. "Don't worry, Ava," her mother reassured her. "Today will be special. Today will be splendid. Today is Saturday." So, zoom, off they went. But as they left the salon, whoosh, their hairdos were ruined. "Oh no," Ava sobbed. "Our dues," boo-hooed Ava's mother. They paused, closed their eyes, and let out a deep breath. "Don't worry, Ava," her mother reassured her. "Today will be special. Today will be splendid. Today is Saturday." So, zoom, off they went. But their peaceful afternoon at the park was loud. "Oh no," Ava groaned. "What did you say? It's too noisy," yelled her mother. They paused, closed their eyes, and let out a deep breath. "Don't worry, Ava," her mother reassured her. "Today will be special. Today will be splendid. And today will be ruined if we miss that bus. So, zoom to the extra special, one night only puppet show they went. "We made it," Ava exclaimed as they arrived at the theater. "Thank goodness," Ava's mother sighed in relief. "Hooray for Saturday," they cheered. "Tickets," chirped the lady at the door. Ava's mother reached into her purse. But the tickets weren't there. "Oh no," Ava's mother gasped. "I left our tickets on the table." As Ava watched, her mother crumpled. "I've had it," she sighed. Story time was canceled. Our hair was ruined. The park was loud, and now we're missing the puppet show. I'm sorry, Ava. I've messed up everything. I ruined Saturday. Ava was quiet for a moment. Then she closed her eyes and let out a deep breath. Don't worry, Mommy, Ava reassured her. Today was special. Today was splendid. Saturdays are wonderful because I spend them with you. So slowly, hand in hand, off they went. When they reached their apartment door, Ava turned to her mother. She had an idea. What if we... Ava started. You know we could, her mother began. So they did. They had a puppet show at home.
As I thought about what to share this morning, I spent some time reflecting on several ways that the phrase love at the center resonates with me. Rather than a cohesive story, I thought I'd share a few musings and reflections with you. I have certainly been humbled by the immense storytelling gift that others in the congregation have shared with us in recent weeks. Please lower your bar appropriately as I take my turn. So first I thought about the love that I have from my parents and from my brother and sister through my childhood and how central that has been to my life. I was fortunate to grow up in a family where love was always present. We didn't have much in the way of money or material possessions, but I knew deep down that my parents and siblings loved me. And that love sustained me through a childhood where frequent bullying and the resulting emotional scars were a sad reality for me. Of course, I spent lots of time thinking about the love I have for my beloved Rebecca. That relationship, which started in college and has continued now for some 31 years, has saved me in so many ways. Rebecca and I thought we were adults when we met as 18 and 19-year-olds. Well, perhaps one of us was more grown up than the other. I'll leave it to you to guess which one that might be. When we were married, one of our vows said in part, loving you now in your growing and becoming. And Rebecca and I have grown up and become together. And through that, I have learned so much about what love really is and what is involved with making a lifelong relationship really work. I am who I am today, due in large part to Rebecca's abiding love for me and mine for her. And I mustn't forget the deep love I have for our three amazing children, Gwen, Oliver, and Patty Grace. Being their dad is truly the best job in the world. So then my thoughts turn to our beloved church. And as Rebecca and I approach a decade as Unitarian Universalists, I'm a recovering Catholic, I can't imagine being part of any other faith tradition. This one fits my family and me so well. I love this church, and I'm nurtured by the love I feel from others here. For a time, we used to recite these covenantal words of James Villa Blake each Sunday in church. Some of you may recall, love is the spirit of this church, and service is its law. This is our great covenant, to dwell together in peace, to seek the truth in love, and to help one another. Love is the center of all we do as UUs. It is present in the way we treat one another with kindness and compassion. It's present in our striving to make the world a more just and equitable place for all people. It's present in our belief in the inherent dignity and worth of every human being and in the way we care about our planet. Not only is love the spirit of this church, love is the center of this church. It is a great privilege to be a member of this community. Finally, I thought about the work that Rexanna and Jacqueline and Jane and I have undertaken this past couple of years in forming our Healthy Congregations team. Boy, have we had a workout these past several months. Recently, we've led about 35 members through listening circles, and we have our final listening circle right after the service today. And during those listening circles, each member shared what was on their mind and what was in their heart. And we heard about hopes for the church's future. We heard about fears and deep concerns, emotions that they are continuing to process, questions that they're wrestling with. And above all, we heard their love for this church and its members and their commitment to help build and strengthen our faith community. In each circle, I marveled at the trust and respect that each member showed for the others in the group. And I felt an opening up happen as each member felt deeply heard. Sometimes listening is love. Being truly heard is one of the greatest gifts a person can receive. In that way, the listening circles became a holy place and our time together a sacred connection. I want to close by sharing with you my very favorite poem. It challenges me to remain open in a world that often makes me want to hide under the covers. I think ultimately part of keeping love at the center is for me a call to remain open, as scary and vulnerable as that can feel sometimes. So this is Wild Geese by Mary Oliver. You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Tell me about despair, yours, and I will tell you mine. Meanwhile, the world goes on. Meanwhile, the sun and the clear pebbles of the rain are moving across the landscapes, over the prairies and the deep trees, the mountains and the rivers. Meanwhile, the wild geese high in the clean blue air are heading home again. Whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination, calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over, announcing your place in the family of things. Thank you.
Let us hold all of our joys and sorrows, spoken and unspoken, in our hearts as we join together in our responsive reading found in our order of service. Sorrow is everywhere,
and joy is reborn.
As we mourn together,
so we celebrate together,
and offer thanks, so may it be now and in all the days to come.
Seems it's a good day to listen to some Mary Oliver poetry. So thank you for setting that up for me, Dan. That's great. But this is a different poem by Mary Oliver. This is called Don't Hesitate, and it's the first of two short poems that I'm going to read today for our reading. Don't Hesitate by Mary Oliver. If you suddenly and unexpectedly feel joy, don't hesitate. Give into it. There are plenty of lives and whole towns destroyed or about to be. We are not wise and not very often kind, and much can never be redeemed. Still, life has some possibility left. Perhaps this is its way of fighting back, that sometimes something happens better than all the riches or power in the world. It could be anything. But very likely you notice it in the instant when love begins. Anyway, that's often the case. Anyway, whatever it is, don't be afraid of its plenty. Joy is not made to be a crumb. And our next poem is Today by Billy Collins. If ever there were a spring day so perfect, so uplifted by a warm intermittent breeze that it made you want to throw open all the windows in the house and unlatch the door to the canary's cage, indeed, rip the little door from its jam, a day when the cool brick paths and the garden bursting with peonies seemed so etched in sunlight that you felt like taking a hammer to the glass paperweight on the living room end table, releasing the inhabitants from their snow-covered cottage so they could walk out, holding hands and squinting into this large dome of blue and white. Well, today is just that kind of day. Here ends our readings. It's so good to be with you all this morning. When Reverend Lisa asked me if I wanted to do a pulpit exchange, I jumped at the chance. Turns out Reverend Lisa and I have both spent a considerable amount of our lives in Minnesota, so kind of interesting that we both ended up in the Lowcountry. So I grew up in northern Minnesota, surrounded by lakes and forest, and as a kid, I had never seen the ocean, but I thought that Lake Superior was one because you couldn't see the other side. I know now that I was wrong, but I also know that I can tell you the names of all the trees in the Great North Woods. I can tell you what to do if you encounter a moose, but I found that none of that is very helpful here in the Lowcountry when I arrived 5 years ago. So I've spent the last 5 years learning a new ecosystem. And a part of my learning involved how to find shark teeth on the beach, something that my daughter, who is six, very much loves to do. And it was a skill that did not come naturally to me, so I asked for help. A good friend of mine taught me, and this friend loves to find all kinds of beach treasures, colorful sea glass, beautiful shells, big sand dollars, and these black fossilized shark teeth, something that I had never had in childhood, any of these beachy things, so I didn't know where to go or how to find them. So on a recent beach walk, I said, look, will you teach me how to find these incredible treasures that you collect? And they said, sure, all you have to do is get down on the sand and start looking. So I did. And I looked and I looked, scanning the beach around me. When that didn't work, I started to dig, combing through the sand with my fingers, nothing. My search got a little bit more desperate, and I was getting frustrated, no shark teeth. Meanwhile, my friend was cheerfully finding them everywhere. At this point, they had a small handful. I found another one, they said. Oh, that's great. Good for you. And they could tell I was frustrated, so they said, here, I found one, but I'm not going to pick it up, okay? So I'll let you find it. I'm going to draw a circle in the sand around the tooth. It's somewhere in there. And so I looked within that little circle, and it took me far longer than it should have, but I did it. I found that tiny, dark gray shark tooth in the middle of a circle my friend drew for me, and I instantly experienced a little moment of joy. What a gift. I did it. And it made me want to keep looking, something so simple. And as I continued, it got a little bit easier. And over the next 30 minutes or so, I found five more shark teeth, all by myself, no circles involved. It's like you kind of just have to develop an eye for something. And then once you do, it gets easier. What a delight. What a joy. What a juxtaposition, I thought to myself, from the earlier parts of my day. For we had gone down to the beach after I had spent a day at work. All of this joy on a day when I had just been in pastoral care conversations with two people who were losing their jobs in this economy. All of this joy when I had just spent part of my afternoon talking to a person facing a major surgery. All of this joy in our current moment of chaos, with the future so uncertain and anxiety so high. All of this joy while war wages around the world. How dare I feel it? How could I possibly feel joy when the world is so clearly ablaze, while there is so much to worry about? How dare I be joyful in these extraordinary times? I was starting to feel a little wash of guilt on top of my joy. But then I remembered what I always tell my congregation in Charleston, that self-care is not only critical, it is an act of resistance. Being joyful is an act of resistance. Joy and wellness are keys to our own survival. Joy and wellness are tools that we have to survive and thrive in difficult times. So no matter what's going on out there in the wider world, know that we always have access to these, to a wellspring of joy. Joy, in fact, is our birthright. No one can take it from us. Joy is your birthright, and no one can take it from you. But it's not to be confused with happiness, right? Because I'm not happy about folks losing their jobs, and I wasn't happy about it that day on the beach. I'm not happy that someone was facing a major surgery or that things were going wrong for folks in my congregation. I'm not happy today that prices are rising. I'm not happy that climate change is unleashing powerful storms. I'm not happy that the lust for power seems to be the only thing that matters for folks in charge. And I'm not happy that there is so much war and pain in the world. I'm not happy about any of that or any of the reasons that so many of us have to despair. Whatever it is that is going on in your life that might bring you sorrow, I'm not happy about that. But I am joyful. Even on the hardest of days, when I'm not happy, I know that joy is always a possibility. Joy is always a possibility. According to Archbishop Desmond Tutu, just so you know, you don't have to take my word for it, he says, joy is much bigger than happiness. While happiness is often seen as being dependent on external circumstances, joy is not. I love that quote. That's how it works for me. Joy doesn't depend on external circumstances. It just doesn't. Joy is a state of being. A spiritual practice. It's like a muscle. You can develop it. You can cultivate it no matter what's happening around you. It is always a possibility. If you're having trouble, sometimes you can get a friend to help you. If you're searching for joy and it's nowhere to be found, you can ask a friend and say, look, would you just draw me a circle and get me located in the right direction, help me get into the right frame of mind, you know. Sometimes if you're looking and looking, take a second look, change your perspective, and with practice, you can develop an eye for it. My guess is that once you start noticing ordinary joy, new possibilities will be unleashed in your world, and you will find more and more of it in the smallest, most ordinary moments of your day. And look, I know we're tempted, we all are, to focus on big things, right? Like, I will know joy if, I will know joy if I get that job. I will know joy if I get married. I will know joy if I have grandchildren or if I achieve this goal. But that's not how joy works. It does not depend on external circumstances. And despite this temptation in our over-the-top culture that says you must do more and have all of these particular experiences or have your life together, like the best job and the best marriage and the best this, that, and the other, you don't need any of that Joy is not big or showy. It doesn't require external things to live in your world. It is subtle and sweet, momentary and minute. It's not even something you might ordinarily brag about on social media. Right? Your cup of coffee in the morning. How boring. But that might be the most joyful part of your day, or the smell of a rose. How beautiful, how joyful, how mundane, how special. Brené Brown talks a lot about this. Have any of you read her books? Probably a lot of you have, I know. Me too, big fan. Brené Brown talks about it in one of her books called Daring Greatly. And she writes that joy comes to us in moments, ordinary moments. We risk missing out on joy when we get too busy chasing down the extraordinary. Scarcity culture, she continues, may keep us afraid of living small, ordinary lives. But when you talk to people who have survived great losses, it is clear that joy is not a constant. Without exception, all the participants who spoke to me about their losses and what they missed the most spoke about ordinary moments. People said things to her in her research like, if I could come downstairs and see my husband sitting at the table and cursing at the newspaper one more time. If I could just hear my son giggling in the backyard. My mom used to send me the craziest texts. She never knew how to work her phone. I'd give anything to get one of those texts right now. And she concludes, don't wait to know joy. It is always yours already. Joy is yours right now, friends. Even on the darkest days, even in extraordinary times, joy is in the ordinariness of all things. It's everywhere. The possibilities are endless. I read a poem this week that I want to share with you that I can't seem to get out of my head. It's called Summer Kitchen by Donald Hall. It's short, and it goes like this. In June's high light, she stood at the sink with a glass of wine and listened for the bobolink and crushed garlic in late sunshine. I watched her cooking from my chair. She pressed her lips together, reached for kitchenware, and tasted sauce from her fingertips. It's ready now. Come on, she said. You light the candle. We ate and talked and went to bed and slept. It was a miracle. Poetry can open you up to joy. So maybe this week you can read some poetry, tap into joy. But if you need some more concrete help, there are those of us who do. I recommend The Book of Joy by Desmond Tutu and the Dalai Lama. Has anybody read that book? Yeah. His Holiness the Dalai Lama and the Archbishop Desmond Tutu both experienced tremendous hardship over the course of their lives. They knew exile, oppression, violence, fear, and suffering, and yet their lives were rich with joy and brimming with laughter. They were giddy and almost childlike. Have you seen the videos or the pictures in their joyful banter? In the book, they swap stories and go over the science of happiness to help us find joy in the ordinary, everyday moments of life. They identify 8 pillars of joy, 8 qualities you can nurture through spiritual practice to help you find it. One of them is perspective, considering situations from different angles. It's so tempting to just stay focused in your own point of view. Resist that temptation and look for other perspectives. Another pillar of joy is humility. Humility is a practice of recognizing our limitations and being open to learning, freeing yourself from any need for perfection. Another pillar of joy is humor. Humor is one that the Dalai Lama and Desmond Tutu seem to have truly mastered, the ability to find pleasure in the lightheartedness and appreciating the absurdity of life, kind of like how it felt in our meditation when we were giggling, having a good laugh. Acceptance is the next one, the fourth pillar of joy. It's about embracing the present moment, accepting things as they are rather than how you wish them to be. Forgiveness, letting go of anger and resentment, both towards ourselves and others, is the fifth pillar of joy. Gratitude, appreciating the good things in life, no matter how small, and expressing thankfulness. Something that works for a lot of people is a simple gratitude journal, so some of you might have one, but you can just keep track of your daily gratitudes. Compassion is the seventh pillar of joy. It involves feeling empathy and concern for others, especially those who are suffering. And this compassion leads us to the eighth and final pillar of joy, generosity. Sharing our resources and time with others without expecting anything in return. Joyful people are generous people. They help others because it just feels good. These eight pillars of joy are a gift to us from two of the spiritual masters of our time. They teach us it's far less complicated than we often make it out to be. Joy is not a prize or a goal, it's a way of life, a practice, a constant possibility, which you can get better at. Of course, I'm not advocating for self-centeredness. It's not all about cultivating joy for yourself. As Desmond Tutu himself says, the goal is not just to create joy for ourselves, but to be a reservoir of joy, an oasis of peace, a pool of serenity that can ripple out to everyone around you. Joyful people, this is my wish for you, that you may become a reservoir of joy, an oasis of peace, a pool of serenity, even in these extraordinary times, especially in these extraordinary times. Enjoy your life, the small moments of it. Soak up what is good. Look for the ordinary blessings. Look again. Ask for help if you need it. Whatever happens, whatever comes your way, regardless of external circumstances, keep your eyes open and your heart open. Read poetry. Remember the eight pillars of joy. Laugh. Shall we do it again? Laugh. Can you laugh? Laugh often. You will be doing yourself and the whole world a favor, unleashing possibilities you never could have imagined. May this be so, and may we be the ones to make it so.
This is Reverend Lisa Day. I hope you've enjoyed this program from the Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah. Please join us at one of our services sometime soon at our church on Troop Square or live on Zoom. We're the beacon of liberal religion in Savannah, and you can find out more at uusavannah.org. We meet on Sundays at 11 a.m. Thanks for listening.